My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic. So we're winding down. We have had a good time with you guys, you know, today. So this is our last time you'll see us this evening, and tomorrow we'll finish up. Tomorrow we'll do a session, and then we'll have, just so you'll know and you can be ready if you want to, we'll have a session. The last session will be Q&A. And so if you have questions, any comments, you know, tomorrow before we leave, we'll have a Q&A session, and it'll be devoted to that. And just a heads up. So these defects of character that we talked about in the last session, when and how, you know, do I start addressing those defects? I was at a meeting, and a guy said something about the defects. And he said, okay, God, I'm going to give this defect to you, but on your end, okay, I'm giving God something. You need to make me okay with what it is that I'm giving up. So if a person's got a defect with porn, or they feel like it's objectionable and they say, okay, I'm going to give it up. Whatever it is that I think I've been getting out of that, okay, God, make me okay without it. If I got whatever it is, I thought that was so interesting, because that's not, most of the time I focus so much attention on what not to do. I thought about that in, when it comes to recovery. I never focus on not drinking, and I never focus on not using. I focus on relationship with this power that takes the desire away, that takes the obsession away. Isn't that interesting? I don't think about, oh, shit, I need to stop. Oh, I focus on the relationship with the power. And then, because I don't get up thinking I'm not drinking the damn. I just found that very interesting. Put that in. So when we talk about these defects, the next thing immediately to do when, so I do a fifth step. Coming out of the fifth step, I see these defects of character. Coming out of this fifth step and seeing these defects of character, now we go over, we talk about it, and immediately, because six and seven is not a discrete activity, you don't sit around, I'm working on these, having God remove these defects, huh? You know, it's not a discrete activity. In fact, it's described as a lifetime effort. This guy is here to report lifetime effort. You know, that business of six and seven continues for life. It's a lifetime effort. Here's the other thing. Got a friend, and he says, because I used to think a lot of stuff was six and seven stuff. If you run into any difficulties in your life right now, sometime you know it's something I need to write about, right? Sometime you know it's something I need to make amends for. But often I'll land on, this is a defective character that I need to take to God. But I got a friend, and he maintains that every situation that he encounters is really a step two situation. I pondered that. I thought about it. When I'm involved in something that is really got me sideways, this really got me where I don't see no way out of this one. Is anybody in here right now dealing with something that's really heavy on them and you really feels like I'm facing some difficult situations, choices, I don't see no way out, or it looks bleak? And in those situations, usually what it comes down to is, I think I've run into something that's too big for God. Right? I'm in this thing, I'm scared, I can't see no way out of it, I don't see an outcome that's going to be favorable to me. When my brother Reggie was smoking, Reggie got sober in 87, and then he relapsed in 92. Reggie came back to us in 16. Reggie was out there about 16 years, my brother, toe up. And I remember getting to a point where I thought, yeah, I know, because it's four of us sober. I got three brothers sober. Four of us are sober. But I was thinking at that time, my brother has voluntarily placed himself beyond God's reach. You might be working with a situation with somebody in your life, and you think to yourself, yeah, I got a guy, yeah, but they don't. They don't. God can't touch this one. Won't touch. What happens when that comes up? Fear. Fear. A difficult situation that is just seeming outside of fear. Step two. But anyway, and since we just talking, you guys invited us here, so you get it. Sometime we're going to be in with the steps we on. Sometime we're just going to be in what we be in. But in 6 and 7, so a lot of us in here, most of you guys listen to fifth steps now. And when I finish listening to the fifth, or when I finish taking the fifth, you know, a lot of people do what it says in the book. I look at it, ponder for an out, go. But immediately, I'm now launched into something to do. And that something to do is not to sit on, I'm in 6 and 7. No. Remember, what we're doing is crafting a lifestyle, a manner of living. I'm not living on numbers. The numbers are just, the steps are just titles anyway. You know, they're just titles. Asking how to remove these shortcomings, that's just a title. The activity of that, the action of that takes place in real time, in real life. Usually, that's not a discrete incident though. 6 and 7 shows up as process over time. All you drinkers and all you smokers that like it to the head right now, recovery ain't to the head right now. Recovery is process in an event, you know, and that's one of the other reasons why it's sometimes problematic for people like us. You know, we like cause, effect. We like cause, drink, smoke, effect, load it. I like it just like that. Recovery ain't like that. You know, I don't care. Tarek will call me on the phone. He'll have a piece of something that's going on with him. And when you get off the phone, it ain't going to be a sitcom. It ain't going to be after a 30-minute conversation. Now it's solved and we go to the next episode. No, that ain't what recovery is like. You know, but when I do this fifth step, you guys, so I do fifth step, 6 and 7, immediately, now I'm writing. As I'm writing, you know, starts in that inventory. You know, wait a minute. How I'm going to put, you know, old boy on there that, you know, Kent owes me money. How the hell is he ending up on my A step? Often he does, you know. Often he does, because as a result of Kent owing me money and not paying me that money, I done talk shit about Kent to Tarek. I done stopped letting Kent, you know, Kent was my boy. I don't invite him over to no more places. I done started doing, it's no, all kind of things I've done in retaliation. You know, and so just like it's instructed, you guys, everything is cyclical and the steps kind of repeat. When we do the inventory, it talks about setting aside the wrongdoings of others entirely. I look, you know, my mistakes and my wrong. Okay, so now I'm in this other crazy thing y'all talking about, amends. Made a list of persons, you know, and so now I engage on that activity. And this amends process is, why am I going to do that? Why would I, you know, let sleeping dogs lie. Some of them don't even know. Grandmama didn't even know that I went in her bank account. Come on now, you know, everybody, he had it coming. She had it coming. You know, they did more to me than I did to them. They started that shit. If they wouldn't have started it, I wouldn't have finished it. You know, all that kind of stuff. So that's why it. But the interesting thing about amends, you guys, I'm going to talk about it now. And nothing, I'm the kind of guy that is not, as you can tell already, I'm not dogmatic. And nothing is etched in stone. As a general course of action, the amends and the step are worked, you know, they follow. They're worked at a certain time. I was doing a workshop with your sponsor, and we were over at the Snake Pit, And we got to amends. And some new people, it was a group came there from a treatment center. Ain't nobody anxious for amends, right? And they were in their first 30, 60, 90 days. And we got to talking about amends, and apparently it got so attractive. A guy raised and said, "Ooh, I want to do." Okay, you so anxious. Who do you want to, who are you ready to make amends to? My ex-girlfriend. Curious, wonder why that is, you know. Ain't trying to do a man. Baby, I'm sorry. I know I hurt you. Is it any way that I, you know? And so one of the reasons why we talk about positioning it there is because, yes, you know, there are certain things that need to be cleaned up, need to be done. I can't meet the conditions to make amends without doing some of the other stuff. I have to go in a helpful and forgiving spirit. That's number one. I don't have a helpful and forgiving spirit if I'm still focused on what you did to me. And the other thing about it, I can't always manufacture a helpful and forgiving spirit. So the timeline is sometimes different. Sometimes folk be like, "I know I owe a response, I just ain't ready, I'm not feeling it." You know, because if you do it, and you do it wrong, I've done a wrong amends, you know, with a defect of character jumping up at me. I went to make amends to this guy, I owed him 200 bucks. When I was new, it seemed like 20,000. You know, oh, 200 bucks, I think. And so I go to this dude, and Ralph got this image, right? I'm an image guy. You know, I'm a suit. I'm all front, no back, right? That's, I got this image. And when I went to do amends, I could not find it in me to talk to this guy who already was making me feel less than him. I owed him money, he doing okay. I couldn't find it in me to say, you know, this $25 I'm giving you right now, all I can afford to give you is $25 a month until this, because that's realistically, I wasn't making money yet. Realistically, that's what the payment arrangement I could have afforded to make. But Ralph is Ralph. Say, "Man, I'm gonna give you this $25. In 2 weeks, I'm gonna have a C-note for you, and in another 2 weeks, I'm gonna finish paying you off." I defaulted on the first payment. Didn't have the money 2 weeks. I didn't know where I was gonna get the money anyway, but I couldn't look at Ken and let him feel superior to me. I'm coming to him with just this 25 chicken shit dollars. He gonna know that I'm at, you know, that's all I was. That's all I had, though. That was the condition I was in. One, the humility that still is one of the essential ingredients for recovery, period. Period. And in this step, it was, so I owed an amends coming out of amends, you know, and so that's not something you want to do. The good news is it makes me really a good sponsor in terms of having some things to share, firsthand experiences with why we don't do this. But there's something else. Remember I said it's a lot of paradoxes in this program? Check this out. Most of us would agree things should be done in the order. The steps are numbered for a reason, right? Right. Our co-founder, Dr. Robert Ho Smith, came off of a run and went back to work the morning after he came off this run. And he went to work that morning. A lot of you guys are nodding because you know where I'm going with this. And they dropped him off at work this morning. And they waited on him to come home after this operation. For those who don't know, Dr. Smith was a proctologist, you know. And so he had an operation he had to do that morning. And he was late coming home. Y'all know when you knew and you're trying to get sober and your people, they clocking you, right? They don't trust you. They already, oh, shit, here he is. He ain't, I know what happened. I know he loaded. I know it. That's, and Bill and Lois were sitting around clocking Dr. Bob, and he didn't show up. And they was like, God. And he showed up late that night. And our co-founder, out of order, said, "I went around town and I did what we now call amends. I made stuff right with the people that I find that story so interesting. One of the reasons I find it so interesting is because I think it demonstrates the power of amends. It really, and Bill and Bob, I think, in order for us to be here now, there were lots of things that got condensed for them. The other reason I say that is there are always times in the spiritual world, even in the material world, there are always exceptions. Don't get stuck in dogma. I don't remember if it was less. Somebody else had a sponsee. I had a sponsee who had a sponsee whose mother was dying. And the sponsee had like 90 days. Hadn't written a fourth step, hadn't done a fifth step, was nowhere near 8 and 9. This is what she asked my sponsee. Sponsee, what do I do? I'm not at the 9th step. We take the numbers off. We get in real life. Go see your mama. Everybody with me? We take the numbers off. We get in real life. And we, all you guys that are sponsoring now, we do the best we can in that situation, prepare them and the rest. And don't even, maybe a lot of you guys may have a typical format and the rest of that. When Kent shares about his amends with his mama, it wasn't off the format, it wasn't off none of that. There are times you get guided by the Spirit. And the Spirit, if I believe God is who God is, he'll work with somebody. It's 30, don't worry about that. Don't worry about it. And that was a case where the sponsee, and because the worst thing is you were sober and your mom would have had an opportunity to spend some time with you sober. But I'm waiting because I ain't at the 9th step and you standing at a funeral doing an amends at the gravesite. And sometimes the amends ain't going to be as formal as what it would be. But that's when we come out of this, come out of it and go into this life I've been given. What a life. I got sober in time to see my mom, take her last, and she got a chance to see me. My old man was estranged from me. He left the house. My old man was an alcoholic, and my mom put him out when I was 8 or 9 years old. I was thinking of sharing this story when we were in resentment inventory, and I didn't because I didn't do that much talking. In resentment inventory, you know, when I do the columns, you know, I do the first column, I do the second column, what's the cause, I do the third column, affects my, and I do the fourth column, and for a long time, because things have evolved, I said my mistakes, my wrong, my fault. But in my first workshop, this guy Joy, we said my part. And I still say my part to piss off everybody who now says, it don't say nothing about part in there. So what? I say my part. I've been writing it for 30-something years. I now add my mistakes, my wrong. Man, I had stopped doing that because I was like evolving with, because most of the people I know in the last years have really said, and I agree, you know, I agree. But for me, because I'm that guy, sometimes there's an element of share bullying that I've been guilty of, you know, what do you mean? Don't get loaded no matter what. I do get loaded no matter what. Let somebody say what they're saying. Even if that's your story, don't go behind somebody correcting. I'm not here to correct. I'm here to support. If I lead with love instead of correcting, man, and so I have intentionally gone back to saying what I put, my part, goddammit. And his sponsor and Bob, I was looking at Bob, and Bob started laughing because he's like, you know what, brother? Because how are we checking anybody on it? Do you know where we come from? This room, this is Saturday night, right? Normally, if you got these two guys with a captive audience on Saturday night, this is what's going on, because I'm a good organizer. We piecing up. You, Tarek, you got a car? Tarek is go. No, Tarek ain't going to go. We heard his story. He don't come back with shit. Tarek. Tarek ain't the one. We not putting. They still waiting on him at the wedding. We ain't putting. But you know, so we laugh, but you know my point? We be share bullying and behind people, and people be like, 90 means, where did that come from? And it dawned on me, you know, when people be saying 90 means, they don't be sharing that's the problem. Number one, what do I want them to share if that's all they got? What do I want them to? I want them to say what I say? What? And that's the chorus, you guys. That is the, quit drowning out the altos. You want everybody to sing soprano because you sing soprano. That's part of the chorus. You got the people that's saying, just go to meetings. You got the people that's saying, 90 means. You got the people that's saying, just don't drink. And that chorus, that cacophony. And usually the people that's in the section is saying, just later on, they move to the other section and they start singing soprano. They start singing, you know, do you know, work this program. But don't drown them out. Because that's us. That's who we are. When you in 90 days, maybe the best you could do, me and Les went to see Bruno Mars in Vegas, and we went and we was up for a week. Okay, I don't want y'all to get mad. Don't want y'all to get mad. But you know, there were some people that made it possible for us to see Bruno, and they were the ushers. And they walked us up to the front. Then Bruno and his people did the performance, and they did what they did. Their job was not to walk us up to the front. Their job was to sing and perform. The people that say, go to 90 meetings, those are the ushers. They usher you into the meeting so that the people that have something to say can say what it is to say. But the people who have something to say, don't be bashing the ushers. Get off the ushers. Nothing's wasted in God's economy. You know what I'm saying? You know, but one of the things that was really, you know, instrumental, the reason I share that about looking at my mistakes and my wrongs and my faults, in addition to me still putting my part, it's not because, oh, all of a sudden that's antiquated and we don't do that now. Us enlightened folk don't say that. No, that's not the reason. But something happened when I was looking at my mistakes. You know, I lied for years about my man. I'm supposed to be on 8 and 9, right? I'm not though, Kent. So do you know, Kent giving me a pass. Kent giving me a pass. So, you know, when I was writing about my old man, you guys, for years, in my second column, I had my own man. He left us. I was in the shower. I said, you know what? That's not even a resentment of mine. I didn't resent him leaving. Me and my brothers used to say he looked good going. You know, I thought, and a man came in our life who was a professional guy. My father was a janitor. And this professional guy came in our life, and he took on a lady who has 6 sons. This man was a hell of a man. He took that job. He saw something in my mom that I see in my mom that was so remarkable. This man took on 6 sons. Fellas, how many of you are volunteering for that duty? I'm not trying to volunteer for that. You know, I'm not trying to. 6 sons. We were growing up in Watts. This man enabled my mom. He bought us our first house. We had been in a little two-bedroom apartment. The first car in my family was as a result of this man coming in our life, right? So I was thinking, and I had never, you know, so I had done this bogus resentment because I was trying to be so diligent and thorough and strange. You know, I mean, not strange. Had it, one of the members of our first workshop, he was sharing stuff, and he said, his dad left him. And I said, oh, yeah, my dad left me. And I wrote about it. That wasn't the resentment. When I turned it around, because I was looking at selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid, and that word, where were my mistakes and my faults? My mistake in that resentment, you know, was wanting my dad to be something he wasn't. What I resented was going to school without a father and being one of these guys at the father-son banquet, because I played ball, and whenever an occasion called for a man to be present, being the guy that had the big brother or the uncle. I resented not having a father, but I didn't resent that specific father leaving me. That was my mistake. I was like, wow. You know, that was, and so that was eye-opening. So that leads me into the story. So the old man is gone. I'm rolling along in pre-pandemic, must have been 18 or 19. And a friend of mine, and we were talking, and I said, you know what? I think when my dad dies and I get the call, it's going to feel something like, maybe a guy I kind of knew okay. And I'll fight. And they said, sounds like you got a resentment. I said, I don't have a resentment. No, I don't have a resentment. I'm pretty neutral and numb to him. But the comment, as a result of being with you guys all these years, doing what I do, letting what we do sink into me, and it is sunk into me. It's my life, you guys. It's the way I live. That comment disturbed my spirit. And I was in meditation. I was thinking about it, and it was coming, and it came to me. And I don't know, Christmas Eve of that year, I called my old man. My cousin out in L.A. had told me his wife, he had remarried, had died in May. I didn't call him, nothing. She had his phone number. I called her and asked her for it. I called him on Christmas Eve, and he answered the phone. He lived in Leavenworth, Kansas. And I said, do you know who this is? He's like, who is this? I said, it's your namesake, because his name is Ralph White. He started crying. Something I discovered that I didn't know prior to the phone call. I was right. I didn't have a resentment. Never resentment. That was true. But there was something that I did have that I didn't know. I didn't know I had this love for my dad. And I started crying. And me and him started crying. And he started bringing me current. And we started talking like grown men for the first time in my life. I would see him over the years when my grandmother was still alive. He would come to L.A. every year to see his mom, my grandmother, the one I told you about, one phone number, one address. And the last time I saw him was 1998. We took him to a Dodger game, me and my brothers, and, you know, and it was cool. But he starts bringing me current. And he told me about when he got put out of the house. And he told me he slept in a car for a year, an abandoned car. He didn't have one. I said, what were you doing in a car? You didn't go back to grandma and granddaddy's? Because his parents, my grandparents, they would. He said he was too embarrassed to let them know what had happened. And he slept in a car, and he did. And we started talking, man. We started talking. I had a narrative about him that I created, me and my brothers. I said that he never wanted to be anybody, and he was this illiterate. And he was kind of like me and my brothers are. He was a high-achieving guy in school. He didn't go to the school in his neighborhood. He didn't go to Jordan High School. He went to this other school because he was so, and he was so illuminating, you guys. For those of you, when you do your fourth and fifth step, and fourth step in particular, and you got your parents on there, Polly Pete shared something with me, and I always like to share it. Get to know your parents' story. It's not in here. But this is one of the things, when it talks about more will be revealed to you or not, this is one of the things that's been revealed from people's experiences. Get to know your parents' story. It's amazing how you'll stumble up on some compassion. It's amazing. So I found out my dad's story. So me and him start talking, right? And that led to him getting all my brothers' number. You know, Ralph, you know, and he starts telling me he hadn't picked up a drink since his wife died. He was pretty much in the house, couldn't get out. No program or nothing, but he wasn't drinking anymore. And he starts doing what we do. Not formal. Ralph, I am so sorry for what I did to you guys. I am so sorry. I wasn't there for you guys. I am so sorry. You know, I haven't been around to participate in your life. And I didn't tell him Our life got better when you were, there was a man that came in that could do way more. I didn't go there, but I took that opportunity. And somebody might say, well, Ralph, how did you owe him? I'm like, Pops, no, I owe you an apology, and I owe you an amends. You know, I heard about your wife died. I didn't call a checkup on you. I didn't follow up. You know, I've kept you out of contact. You've got amazing grandkids that you haven't had an opportunity to meet yet. You know, I haven't kept you. And I was told him, all of us, you know, you will be proud. We all doing well, you know, salve this conscience about that. Put him in touch with all my brothers. And he ended up talking to all my brothers, you know, for 3 years. That was about 18. He died during the pandemic. He died in 21. And he was 92 when he died. And a lot of times when we do amends, you guys, we say, when they died, I was clean, right? I was clean. I didn't know anything. But here's what happened in that one. And I would call it collateral, but I think it's primary. He was clean. Not so much me. He was clean. He went for almost all his adult life thinking he was a failure. He went almost all his adult life thinking that he did not know what happened with his sons. You know, he had been seeing us occasionally and knew we were doing okay, knew we had finished college, knew, but he in a general way. And then I started talking about him about recovery, being that I'm going all over and we just talk, and we talked as grown ass men. I had never done that with him because he was gone. And but that was unanticipated, right? When I do amends, even, I'm not doing it even, but sometimes I think of the rewards and the benefits in a selfish, self-serving kind of way, even though that's not the intent. The intent is to fit me to be a maximum service. But sometimes fitting me to be a maximum, it's still, you know, things I get to do. I hadn't even thought about the prism of what it does sometimes for the other person. And so my dad got that opportunity, you guys. And so when you want to see, and you want to know, when do I really start with this 6 and 7 deal? Well, when I come out of that fifth step, a lot of stuff takes place in that single meeting. You know, coming out of the fifth, 6, 7, we get looked at, we go through the prayer, put that on the table as a piece of continuing business with this power, and now I'm writing an 8th step. And we are about to start talking about the ones that I'm willing and able to do as a frontline piece of business. And then then so many things happen from that, you know. So why does that start already being a piece of steps of 6 and 7? Well, I'm addressing some of my defects the minute I start writing an 8th step. You know, procrastination, I'm addressing that one. Fear of going to look at people, I'm addressing that one. You know, so things start getting addressed. You know, if I just do what it is that's in front of me, you know, and I keep my feet moving, it's physics, you guys. Objects in motion tend to stay in motion. Objects at rest, you know, and at rest, that's the resting on our laurels and going backwards. It's just physics. Stay, keep it moving. Keep it, the spiritual fit, just keep it moving. And if I do the next thing after that, it's going to be a piece of what it is, because it rolls me right into, you know, when I come out of that 9th step. And the thing about the 9th step, you guys, when I'm doing it and doing these amends and going to people and I'm going to see the people, I always say I'm getting ready to go see the people, right? And a different person is going to present than the one that did whatever it is I'm there for, right? And so when I go to see the people, it's humbling. Sometimes it's kind of okay, and sometimes in the back of your mind, ooh, I'm seeing somebody out there. But generally speaking, it's humbling, and it should be. There should be a deterrent effect to doing amends. If it was all fun and if it was all, I'd be hurting people all the time. Ooh, I can't wait to make amends. No. There is a deterrent effect. You know, sometimes it'll stop you when you go to 11 and 10 and 11 and you get in that pause. And in the pause, you say, I'll be damned if I want to tell that goddamn Dylan. I'm not going to make no man. I'd rather just shut up now. I'd rather just keep my mouth closed, you know. And that is, you know, that's the deterrent effect of it. But that's when you see the synchronicity of the steps. You see how all of them are coming together, you know, because when I come out of that ninth and I start living and I get this new address, you know, the book calls it, you know, the realm of the spirit. And my friend Sharon C talks about, you know, walking on the sunny side of the street. And when you walk on the sunny side of the street, you know, you operate different, you know, and I'm operating with power tools now, you know. So when these things come up, it sounds suspiciously like a fourth step again. I'm watching for these resentments and these, you know, dishonesty, you know, and fear and dishonesty. So I'm watching for those things, right? And selfishness, dishonesty, fear. And when, not if these crop up, when they crop up, I'm going to do something. And now instead of having to go pencil to paper and the rest of this, I'm operating with power tools. It was manual labor when I was doing a fourth step. I'm operating with power tools now, and I can go through it. And when you do it for years and years and years and years like this, you can go from one to four like that. Like that. And the interesting thing about it, and I'm getting ready to get us to camp, the interesting thing about the 10th step, especially when I'm watching in the day, in the moment, when I get sideways with somebody or I'm getting ready to go left, when I pause, now I'm talking about the 11th step. So I'm pausing in the 11th, throughout my day. Okay, God, this your show, this ain't mine. You got this, not me. You running this thing. I'm just up in here. I'm higher labor. I am not management. You know, you do what you do. And so then in the pause, right, that's the 11th, I'm practicing the 10th step. I'm watching for this stuff. And while I'm watching for this stuff, guess what's getting addressed? My defects of character. I'm not acting out on them. I'm not talking shit. I'm not gossiping. I'm not judging. I'm not having to have the last word. That's a big one with me. Got to have the last word. Anybody else don't listen when you get in an argument. You're not listening to discuss. You're listening for the pause. So you can get in there. You just, the synchronicity of this lifestyle. That's why I can't say the numbers drop off, you know. And so by the time I'm in that, we call it a design for living, you know, and in the book is several references, the AA way of life. What a life, you know. And it keeps me, and these guardrails we call principles protect me from me. It made me better than I am on my own. Oh, go on, Kent, get me out of this.
Can't call them an alcoholic. And there's three words that are sitting here going through my head, and those three words are do no harm. Do no harm. I had never been AA before. I'd never seen the steps. Make amends. I didn't understand what an amend was. I've said I'm sorry a million times. That's to get you off my back and into my corner. I've done that a million times. It wasn't nothing about you. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't jumping up and down saying, hey, and some people do. People come in right away. Like, I want to go make amends. Why? Why? Because you want everybody to be okay with you. It's about you. It ain't about them. You don't understand the spirit of this. That's why they did put it in 9. I am not a cookie cutter sponsor. I have people that, yes, if somebody's dying, we go take care of it, right? I'm not a cookie cutter sponsor. But I do understand the spirit in which amends are supposed to be made are the result of the steps that preceded. I do understand that. I felt when I came into AA and I got to this point that I had dug a hole that I was not going to be capable of getting out of. I owe so much money I could work till I'm 90 and I ain't ever going to get paid off. I didn't understand any of this stuff. I've done damage. Now you want me to face people that I'm ashamed to face. See, it's all about me. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of my problem. I'm thinking about how this gonna make me look, how it's gonna make me feel. I don't understand the spirit of doing this. And I had sponsors that wouldn't allow me to go do it because they understood that. So, you know, we get to this point, and I'm given the direction to make the list. I'm also told to pray. We're now living on a different basis, right? So before you write anything down, hit your knees, ask God to reveal to you what needs to come out now so that we can proceed. Anything else come up later, this is a one day at a time as long as I'm here, right? So I'm not worried about it being an exercise in perfection. I'm not going to make making a list a six-month ordeal. So I did what I was told, and I made this list. Nobody told me, people can do what they do. I was just told an amen is an amen. There was some I didn't want to do, but I was willing to do them. See, that second part of step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed. I hear a lot of talk about that, but I don't hear a lot of talk about it became willing to make amends to them all. Second time, okay? Now you got your 6-step prayer, you got your 8-step prayer, ain't no crack to fall through here. If I'm not willing, I pray for the willingness. There was a couple that I wasn't. And I followed the direction I was given and began to pray for it. I kind of alluded to one of them earlier. Some bad stuff. And that time eventually, I did become willing. This was not someplace I could go. This was not someplace I could not go around these people. But eventually, most of them dead now, but we did get a chance to get that, but irregardless. So I'm praying for the willingness to face those that I'm not willing to, either from fear or shame. Made the recommends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So you have to understand something about me when I came here. I had long since given up on any kinds of goals or dreams or hopes or any kind of belief that I would ever have anything decent or have a decent life. Quite frankly, I wanted to do what AA was asking me to do and then go somewhere and get away from everybody and just leave them alone. And quite frankly, that's what I wanted to do. I believed that I had had my chance. I believed that I had blown it. And I was frustrated when I got sober and I looked at my life. In truth, I had nothing. I had a job. That's it. I had a job. And I didn't believe anything was possible. I know that amends are to be made under the direction of sponsorship. Ralph talked about an amend that was improper that he did, right? And I need to make sure that somebody who has this experience is guiding me in this, because I have a tendency to act on behalf of self. And to color it and justify it so it don't look that way to me, right? We call that lying to yourself. My grandparents called it selling yourself a bill of goods. That's what they called it. And so I got this list. Oh, I'm going to hit a couple things real quick. I'm not going to stay in this a long time. Oh, with tons of money. Good Lord. I ain't never going to have nothing. my sponsor said, well, let's sit down. Now, I told you what happened when I sat down with my dad. This came down to, you ain't worth a quarter. So I sat down with my sponsor, and he was like, well, how much are you making, right? And I was working at Ford. And back in them days, like, I worked at Sandusky. We made all the lighting for Ford worldwide. You work as much as you want. You could work 12 hours a day. You work 7 days a week. You could call your own shot. You could make as much. We made money like lawyers in there. We did. I ain't lying. And he says, well, you've got a job. And I said, well, I've been had a job a long time. He said, but you ain't going to dope house now. You ain't going to dope house now. So let's see what we can do here. So, you know, I had done the things, you know, got the credit cards, ran them up, never paid nobody. I owed my grandfather a bunch of money. And my parents, obviously, tons of money. I owed money in the street, you know. And so we began to, he had me call places, you know, make the best deals I could. He told me, you're never allowed to miss. Once you commit to this, you're never allowed to miss. So don't commit to something that you can't do. Ralph just told us about that a while ago. So I made, you know, and so I started paying, right? Start paying. Lots of money. Lots of money. I owed a whole bunch of money to the court system, as you may well imagine. And in my mind, I want y'all to stay with me. In my mind, it's like 40 grand. It's like, I have no idea how much it is. I've never even tried to find out. But it's got to be at least $200,000. I'll never get it paid. My sponsor said, well, this was Kenny. Kenny said, well, I need you to go down there and ask him. So, a college boy. So I go down there, and the lady, you know, down at the city building, she was like this. And, you know, I owed them, I don't know, like $1,200. Really? $1,200, huh? Okay. So I said, well, if I do this and this, she said, yes, that would work, right? So I did that. So I'm paying off the money. I made amends to people that I worked with. I had been in a relationship for a long time. That person was living in Denver. I asked my sponsor if I could make that amend through the mail. He said, did you harm her through the mail? Then he said a couple of things I won't repeat and told me get a plane ticket and go. He said, this is not one that you know. So I did that. Rough experience, but thank God I did it. That person, she died of this disease a couple years ago, but we remained friends. And she came to me a couple years before she died and told me that she knew she was going to. Her father had drank himself to death, and she said, I'm gonna die like my daddy. And I hooked her up with some people in Denver, some women in Cocaine Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous. And to be honest with you, she never followed. She talked to them, but they couldn't get her to do nothing, right? So, it is what it is, but that's how that went. But it was a rough week when I was out there. When somebody look at you and say, my life is in the condition that it is because of you. I have no children, I have no home, right? I don't know, it was rough. My mom and dad, and I talked earlier about starting to understand the ripple effect of this thing and how it just mentally, physically, financially, just reduces the quality of people's lives around in so many ways, in so many ways. What do you do? So I'm back in the house. I'm going to all these meetings. By this time, I'm sponsoring. I'm bringing my first guys to my mother's house, sitting at her dining room table. My mother right around the corner. We end this book. She listen, you know she listening. And we talking about a relationship with God. My mother ain't saying nothing. Listen. You don't do to somebody what I did to my mother and expect them to. I didn't know if my mother ever, if that ever, but I was willing to do what I needed to. And she was very sick. I remember I hung around, I think you can tell, with some older members of AA when I got here, because that's how I was brought in. And I'm thinking about Tractor Bob, the late Morris Chapin over in New London, Ohio. These are guys from the 40s and 50s who took a liking to me. And they would have me come speak at their groups. They would come to visit the old timers at my group, and they'd come, Kenny, come go with us. And the newer people used to say, Kent, always with them old dudes, right? And I look back at that now, because so much of what I bring to you came from them. But they used to, this is before cell phones, they used to call my house to see how I was doing. And if I wasn't home, they would talk to my mother and father. And they would say, you know, Kenny is really trying hard. He's doing a good job in AA. He's trying to help you. I ain't asked them to do that. My father told me years later, you never know the effect that that had. Now I'm sober long time like them. Am I doing things like that? These cats set the bar high. But they said things like that to my mom and dad. So there's money involved, obviously, in this deal. Now, I had been to meetings, and I heard folks say, well, I offered mom and dad money, and mom and dad said, oh, no, just stay sober, keep doing what you're doing, we don't need no money. I'm here to tell you tonight, my mom and daddy missed that meeting. I went to see my mother. I come and sit down with my mother, and I said, look, I said, I'm doing, following the directions that I've been given in the steps of AA, and I know I owe y'all some money. And my mother said, you better believe you do. She said, and I want my money back. She said, your father has numbers. Back to the kitchen table with my dad. Got this little black book. Bang, pulls it out, and I couldn't argue with it. And my sponsor told me to tell him when they gave me a number to add 10%, add some interest. So I told my dad that, and I thought, he's going to say, no, we don't need to do that. My father said, okay. I have to understand something. My father was a master sergeant in the United States Army. My father worked at General Motors for 42 years. He never missed a day's work. My father was a stand-up guy and a man's man. My father was like my older brother. He was a really nice guy, but don't come at him sideways. My father was not a man to play with or be trifled with. My father fought in the woods in Korea. He wasn't on no boat sitting no place. And it's a miracle he didn't kill me for the way I treated my mother. Seriously. It is a miracle that my father did not kill me, and I am pretty sure that it crossed his mind on many occasions. So I started to, I had a good job. That's the one thing God got, it's the only thing I had. And the only reason I had that job, I'm going to tell you right now, is because of the United Auto Workers Union. That's the only reason I had it, the UAW, who's on strike right now. That is the only reason I had that job. They protected me when I should not have been. I should have been fired years before that. And that was the only reason I had that job. So I kept doing the things I was doing. And my mother, she took a turn for the worse. And at this point, I'm sober 2.5 years. Paying the money, ain't missed the payment. Going, bringing cats to the house. And you know. My sponsor Bill said, not yet, I'll tell you when. And she took a turn for the worse and started the back and forth to the hospital, and he said, okay. He said, it's time. He said, I want you to go make your direct. Hit your knees. So, you know, I did, and then I put it in God's hands, and then as I drove there, I planned a speech. It's a beautiful speech. You know, it was some of my best work. And I got to the hospital and I came into my mother's room. The first couple of years, see, I am so, dude, I'm going to say to you, like, oh, the first couple of years of my sobriety was so rough because it is. It's always got to be about me. It was rough for her. I went up to see her one Saturday after the morning meeting, and I came up the steps. And she was in the room at the end of the hall. She didn't know I was out there. They had the door closed, the curtain around in there. The nurses were in there. And my mother let out a scream that I will carry to the grave. I've never heard anybody scream in pain like that. And she said, for God's sake, get your hands off me and let me die. And I was in the hall, and I heard that. And I went down the street, down the steps, across the street, to the treatment center, went up, got off the elevator in the second floor where the detox is. There was a girl, her name was Pat. She was a member of this fellowship. She worked up there, and she looked at me when I walked off that elevator. She said, there's two guys back there right now, go. Because that's what y'all told me to do. So I got over there, and I sat with my mother, and just me and her. And I looked at my mom, and she looked at me, and the big speech went away, and the only thing I could say to my mother was, Mom, I'm sorry. Now, let me tell you something. Said that a million times. She always gave me the same answer. Kenny, we know you're sorry. You have proved that. But what comes from the heart reaches the heart. See, you have to understand something. Seeing is believing. My mom had been watching me for 2.5 years. I had become a man of my word because of y'all. I had become a person who was trying to do better. And my mama looked at me, and the tears started coming down her face, and she got the biggest smile on her face, and she said, Kenny, I forgive you. She said, all we ever wanted was the best for you. She said, I want you to make me a promise that you will stay with these people in AA. She said, they were the answer to my prayer. She said, they were able to do for you what we could not. And I promised her that I would, and I have. And when she passed, later that evening, the family was called in. And they was all up there. And all her nieces and nephews, they used to call her T, Auntie, T-T, T-T. And my uncle, her brother, stood in the back, and he said, don't call her no more, because she ain't going to look away from him, pointed at me, because that's how she wanted to go. And that's how my mother, when she took her last breath, she was looking at me. Now, I've been blessed a billion times over since then. But I can honestly tell you that if I had never gotten anything else in the rest of my life, that would have been enough. Thank God for sponsorship. Thank God for these steps. Thank God for this fellowship. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous and everything that it has to offer. My father died when I was 18 years sober. And I'm gonna tell you something. I made direct amends to my father. And I had embarrassed and humiliated him innumerable times. And my father, I love my dad. My daddy was kind of shady. And you know, like a lot of people's dad, right? I used to see my dad out sometime, right? And sometimes my dad would pull me to the corner and he'll say, give me a couple of dollars. They're like, no, I'm cool, right? It's my daddy. My daddy had nine, there was nine boys and two girls in his family. And all nine of the boys were shady. All nine of them. I knew every single one of them. Bunch of them was alcoholic. But buddy, when we was young and them nine got together, it was something to see. And my grandfather sitting underneath the tree laughing, looking at them. They were something else. And so my dad was cool, right? And after my mother died, my father started doing some things that I did not approve of. My grandfather had died and left my father and my mother a lot of money. And I ain't like the way that money was being spent. Now, mind you, my grandfather ain't leave me a dime, okay? Because he knew, right? And I talked to my sponsor about it. My sponsor said, oh, you upset because he's spending your money. I said, well, you know, I think it could be handled better. And my sponsor said, well, I can't say, I'm not going to use that language, but he said, you selfish SOB. He said, your grandfather didn't leave you a damn dime. Ain't none of that money yours. He said, let me tell you something. He said, after the things you've done, do you feel you got a right to say anything to your father about what he's doing? See, understand, I made amends to my father. Me and my father was good. I'm getting ready to go mess it up. I'm getting ready to go mess that up. And my father had the right to live and to make his own decisions and live his life through playing God, wanting somebody to be something that they're not, really, me? I left my daddy alone. And my daddy come see my kids. And they love their granddad. And I was the last one to be with my father. Good night, he passed. And I knew that when I left there that I would not see him alive again. And actually, an hour after I left him, we got the call. But I talked to my father, and he was good with what he needed to be good with. And I thank God that I was able to be there. I made amends to people in my family. And it's a funny thing, because I had become literally the shame and the joke of the family. My younger cousins disrespected me. And I was sober probably about 5 years. And they came to me, older cousins and younger, and said, we want to resuscitate the family reunion, because many of our older members had passed on. We want to resuscitate the family reunion, but we need you to lead us and put it together. We put it back together. It's still going now. We just had it in Houston. When something happened now, they called me. Listen, we do what we do because it's the right thing to do. I don't do the things so God loved me Period. God loved me when I wouldn't do a damn thing for him or you. I don't do the things I do to be rewarded. God don't operate on a merit system. God, Ralph said, God is love. Nothing else. Can't be nothing else. Couldn't if he wanted. Can't be. That's all God is. I wanted to get a home and tell you a funny little quick story and we can get out of this. Had a guy, went to the credit union that at the Ford plant. They directed me to a mortgage company. Guy calls me up, says, give me your information, gave him all this information. He said, okay, thank you. And then I'm like, okay, go ahead, look at that stuff and tell me I'm out of my mind so I can get this out of my head, because ain't no way this is happening. Guy calls me back the next day. He goes, I don't see nothing wrong with this. I said, Coleman, Kent, right? I don't know who you looking at. This. He said, no. Nah. He said, I don't see nothing wrong with this. He said, I'm going to come to see you tomorrow, and we'll get some paperwork going. So he comes, and we're sitting at the dining room table and got all these papers out here. And he's getting ready to go. And he said, did you have a good day today? I said, yes, I did. And he said, me too. He said, but I just live one day at a time. And I said, you know, I said to myself many times today, easy does it. Right? So dude, he was a big dude, beard. He got up, he smiled at me, he left. He called me the next day when I was at work, and he was like, how long you got? And I told him, and I asked him, how long you got? And he had a whole bunch more than me. He told me he was a member of the gazebo group in Cleveland. I knew that group. And he said, you just became my highest priority. I'm not telling you that these kinds of things will happen for you, because God will bless you for doing what you should have done in the first place. But I will tell you that the God of my understanding, the grace has no limit. I don't, like, check this out. Like, I like to assign my character flaws to God. Well, I wouldn't forget that. I know God must be mad at me. I actually project my own human limitations onto this power. The power ain't nothing but love. Just amazing, an amazing life. And I'm not talking about externally. People told me if you want things, you need to work for them. I said I wanted to work. I told my cousin, who was a manager at Ford, same age as me, graduated the same year as me, raised like my sister. I said, I know more about that stuff than you do, and I got a college degree. I said, how come I ain't got one of them jobs? And she looked at me and she said, because we've all got advanced degrees. If you want what we have, why don't you go do what we do? But that's how you are, Kenny. You always want something for nothing. Hurt my feelings. And I went back to school and I got an advanced degree and then had a great career the last 15 years that I was there. My point being, you know, there's promises, you know, nice step and all that, but what I could tell you is this. It's the first time in my life I started to really feel free. When the telephone rang, I didn't have a stroke. When the mailbox came, the mailman came, I didn't faint, right? That black cloud that had seemed to follow me everywhere I went and permeated my existence, all of a sudden, there was sunshine. What a wonderful way of life. Calvin Boyd used to say in Akron, God rest his soul, Calvin used to say, what a wonderful way of life. And it is. And it is step 9. And as Ralph said, you know, it's an ongoing thing, right? I'm trying to learn to live in the day. I'm trying to stay in the presence of the power as much as I can by reducing how much me gets in the way so that I don't have to make amends as often. I told my first sponsor one time, I'm getting tired of making amends. He said, quit being a jackass. it ain't hard, son. Right? And so, on where we go. And so that's going to be it for tonight. We got a speaker coming up, Sydney, in a little bit. So for right now, that's it for me and Ralph. God bless. Have a great night.